This is the Schnitt Show.
All right, hello and welcome. It is hour two of the Schnitt Show. I'm Casey O'Day in for Todd. He is out this week, so today and tomorrow I'll be hanging with you. Although he is tweeting, I was just on his Twitter account here. Apparently he's received an email that he had to opine upon. So if you crave a little Schnitt, make sure you follow him on Twitter at Todd Schnitt. And I want to know where he got that delicious pizza that's the header there. I have not seen that before, so. Anywho. All right, a few little things we got to get to. I got more stories than I probably need for today's show and tomorrow's show, but that's okay, because other news will happen. So cities now are refunding police departments, and I can't imagine why. Cities across the country are refunding police departments after nationwide defund the police movements last year led to law enforcement funding cuts. Austin, Texas was one of the main cities that took measures to shift or cut its funding last year, as reported by the Austin American Statesman. Last year, quote, the city council cut or reallocated a higher percentage of money from the police budget than any of nearly two dozen other cities nationally that significantly altered law enforcement funding at the time. The outlet also added that after a law was passed earlier this year in Texas, in the budget, most recent budget, council members were forced to restore funding to the police department, which is now at its highest ever at $442 million. The council also funded at least two cadet classes, but said the department could do a third if it can find money in its budget. The Oakland City Council voted in approval of adding another police academy after previously stopping academies. In June, the city council rejected the mayor's proposal to fund six academies over 2 years and instead approved only four. Well, they realize that's not enough because they need the academies to handle the turnover, and you get it. In a written piece, he stated Dallas, Texas was also affected and saw a shift in messaging when Mayor Eric Johnson said the city needs more police officers. The cuts were too deep. Dallas needs a more robust community policing effort to fight violent crime and strengthen neighborhoods. Burlington, Vermont approved bonuses for police officers as a form of retention. New York City took similar action in its budget earlier this year. Spending by the police for the police department in New York increased by $200 million after previously being cut the year before. The L.A. Police Department, which underwent one of the more significant cuts, they've just decided to increase funding 3%, and it won't reach where they were, but it gets them closer. I think they cut 5 or 6%, so about halfway. So, what's up with that, right? What are they doing that for? Well, over the past year, crime, especially violent crime, has reached extreme levels in the United States. So, I don't know, maybe just possibly the citizens don't like the part where more of them are getting murdered or robbed or raped or mugged. So, it's a theory I have. You can argue the veracity of it. In 2020, this number is staggering, by the way. In 2020, the largest spike in homicide rates in over 100 years was recorded, and it was the largest ever. More specifically, since the FBI has done the violent crimes tracking thing, and I believe they started that in 1960. One of the largest recorded increases by about 30%. Between 2019 and 2020, homicide rates jumped by about 30%, the largest or one of the largest recorded increases in American history. I suppose the other would be, I don't know, the Civil War maybe? Some are also speaking out against the anti-police movement that have taken place over the year, including actor Morgan Freeman, who discussed defund the police, stating he's not in favor of it. In an interview, he recently said, "I'm not in the least bit for defunding police. Police work is, aside from all the negativity around it, very necessary for us to have them, and most of them are guys just doing their job. They're going about their day-to-day jobs." Polling shows that Americans are generally not in favor of efforts to defund police. So you're telling me a bunch of moonbat, knee-jerk city council member, a knee-jerk reaction stuff wasn't the right path? Huh. According to polling from June, four polls actually conducted found that Americans opposed the defund the police movement 58% to 31%. That was June of last year. Now we get to a more recent poll, and it's only 18% of respondents support defunding the police. Let's see. White Americans, it's okay. Here's who opposed it, rather. So when asked, do you oppose the defund the police movement, white Americans oppose it 67%. Republicans, 84%. Only 28% of black Americans and 34% of Democrats were actually in favor of it, that according to USA Today. So, yeah, that was kind of predictable right there. 800-801-8999. Then you couple with what we talked about, I believe, on Monday. In Monday I talked about it. Time flies, you know? And that is where there is a possibility that in Seattle, who already is down, I believe, 200 officers to fund the police, to about 1,000 officers, potentially tomorrow, which is the deadline date, they still have 400 officers who haven't been vaccinated. And only 100 of the 400 have even applied for a religious exemption. What are you going to do in the city of Seattle? That's crazy, man. Seattle's one of the... I'm a huge fan of the West Coast. I hate how jacked up it's got from a politics standpoint, but Seattle's another wonderful city. But it's a city that is just overrun. It's overrun because of the permissive nature of things there. It's really sad. There's one of the local TV stations there did a documentary called Seattle is Dying. So it's an hour, and it's insane, and you should watch it. It's on Netflix. It's not going to cost you anything. YouTube. It might be on Netflix, but it's on YouTube. Easy to find. Seattle is Dying. And I think they did a follow-up companion to it, but the Seattle is Dying one is the one you want to go to. And you see the tent cities. I mean, you're seeing this in a lot of places. You see the tent cities. You see the permissive nature when it comes to drug use, the violent crime that then sometimes is part of the drug use component, where there's a murder in there. There's a crazy dude with no pants and a trash can screaming at people like he's Oscar the Grouch. That's fascinating. And I believe they said that dude had like 50 arrests, and he doesn't look like an old guy either. And it's just really unfortunate. I was in Washington. I'd mentioned this on the show. I was in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago for a Radio Row. And it was interesting because because of the regulations in D.C., the Radio Row had to be set up outside, or we would have all had to do radio with masks on. So this event, which is normally inside, they scrambled, and on the rooftop of the Fox News building. And it's funny because it's actually Fox News in that building, CNBC, and CNN might be in there too. It's a big almost wraparound building on this block. It's just a block and a half from the Capitol. And anytime you see somebody doing one of those stand-up shots where they look like they're on a roof and they have the Capitol Dome and that flag right behind them, there's a stage out there. And so the whole roof is actually a huge flat stage. It's a big venue. Sometimes they use it for big weddings. And then the news stations use it for doing shoots. So we went up there, and we actually did Radio Row up there. And so my Radio Row is looking directly east off of that building, and that looks directly at Union Station in Washington, D.C. And it's cool. I mean, it's a really cool view. Except the entire front of Union Station is a tent city. And as you went and you drove around the city and you know, ran errands or went to get stuff to eat, you know, you go up to DuPont Circle, there's a tent city in the middle there. You go a lot of places, tent city, tent city, tent city. And you're watching all this stuff, and you see the video of Venice Beach, too. That was crazy. I watched a video from there. I watch a lot of videos. I'm very bored during the day. And you see what's going on there. Well, this is how you get there, and then the crime spills over from that. And I understand that it's a hot potato, it's a big political issue, but It's just, it's also really depressing. And it's not that I'm not sympathetic either. A combination of addiction and mental illness largely drives a lot of that. And I don't know what the answer is, but I'm pretty sure the answer isn't going and giving them needles and being like, yeah, you could totally shoot meth here. That's fine. We're good with that. Up in Durham, North Carolina, part of my broadcast market, it's kind of shooty in Durham. Kind of a thing, and it's been a thing for a while, and it's a thing that when things were getting worse all over the country, they were very much getting worse in Durham. And they brought in a new police chief, and she's super woke, and she was giving a presser the other day, and she said, well, we're not going to be able to arrest ourselves out of this. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I think if somebody's shooting people, you should arrest them. And then if other guys shooting people or shooting at people even, you should arrest them. We've had multiple tragic stories of kids. There was a 4-year-old birthday party. I mean, you know how this works. Drive-by shooting, kid gets caught in the crossfire. Terrific. And I feel horrible for those neighbors that live in those neighborhoods where this is happening. Right? They're not necessarily in a financial position to move. They may be in even, Section 8 housing. But they're not participatory in this. And that's what they have to live in? I bet if you ask them, they think you can arrest your way out of this. Or you can try. Make an effort. So I don't know what's going to happen there. So there's a lot of different reactions, but it's interesting to see all these cities that were leading the charge to fund the police will send social workers. Yeah, you do that. Now going, well, maybe we should give them a little money back. 800-801-8999, the phone number. You want to be on the show. We will, speaking of Seattle, I actually have a Seattle story. A Seattle school has canceled a pumpkin parade. I'll tell you why coming up next here on Schnitt.
Schnitt Show. Click on the Schnitt list every day at schnittshow.com.
Well, look at that. The Dog and Pony Show has decided that they will go ahead and recommend the Justice Department criminally prosecute Steve Bannon. This is the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Again, this is the one that Pelosi put together. Wouldn't let any the Republicans that were chosen to be on there was able to get the two Republicans who most hate Donald Trump to be on there. And it's kabuki theater. But the House committee says that they the Justice Department should prosecute him after he refused to appear for a slated deposition. Bannon had informed the committee last week that he would refuse to comply with the subpoena, citing a yet-to-be-filed suit from former President Trump, claiming documents and testimony sought by the committee are covered by executive privilege. The law allows for Congress to refer a non-compliant witness to the Justice Department for prosecution, and it could result in jail time, a fine, both, or largely, when it happens, nothing. But, you know, in this case, it probably will happen because, unfortunately for Bannon, it's Joe Biden's Justice Department. Mr. Bannon has declined to cooperate with the select committee and is instead hiding behind the former president's insufficient blanket and vague statements. If I had a nickel for every Obama official, especially when they were doing the IRS investigations where they just refused to provide them, refused to go, and as far as I know, nothing happened to any of them. This is kind of commonplace in Washington, D.C. Unfortunately for Bannon, the Democrats are more bloodthirsty than the Republicans on this stuff, which is why they had no problem going after several folks, going back to all of the Mueller stuff. And of course, Bannon, obviously part and parcel of that. Let's see here. We, the committee, reject his position entirely. The select committee will not tolerate defiance of our subpoenas. So we must move forward with proceedings to refer Bannon for criminal contempt. I've notified the select committee that we will convene for a business meeting Tuesday evening to vote on adopting a contempt report, said Chair Benny Thompson. The select committee will use every tool at its disposal to get the information it seeks. This is a gigantic waste of time. Everybody knows this is a gigantic, purely political waste of time. Now, that's not to say that there shouldn't be some questions and some perhaps some policy updates. You know, why in some instances were doors open that are not normally open? I talked to a former member of Congress today on my morning show, and we were getting into this because I have another story here. Where did I? I'll find it, whatever. But, right here. You got another story here about a federal judge that is now pushing the DOJ to launch civil rights probe into the treatment of some of the January 6 detainees. There's still about 40 of them. And so I was talking to him, and I said, here's what I don't understand. I said, I've been up to the Capitol. There's parts where you can go, and you can go in, or you can go part of groups. You don't just get to walk in, obviously. They got the metal detectors up there. And then there's other parts you got to be accompanied with a member of Congress or their staff. They got to have the pass, all of that. I said, but I don't remember those doors just being wide open over there. And I understand that there were some doors that were broken through, but others that were literally open. And you can see on video people being let in there. Maybe get to the bottom of that, but that's not what they're going for. So we'll see what happens. Bannon and his attorney did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So that theater will roll on. All right, an hour and a half in, another hour and a half to go. In fact, I'm going to get into that federal judge story on the January 6th detainees, and we will do that coming up right after the bottom of the hour. It's the Schnitt Show. Hang on.
This is the Schnitt Show. The Schnitt List is on.
SchnittShow.com.
All right, welcome back, and here we go. Second half of the second hour, Schnitt Show. Casey O'Day sitting in for Todd today, and a federal judge is pushing for Biden's Department of Justice to launch a civil rights investigation into the treatment of January 6 detainees after finding the warden of a D.C. jail and the director of the Department of Corrections for D.C. both in contempt. The judge's name is Royce Lamberth. Said who acted after finding jail officials failed to turn over information needed to approve surgery recommended 4 months ago. All right. So one of the 40 or so folks who remain in detention had a doctor saying that he required surgery and they just ignored it, is what the judge is looking into, that allegation. Let's see. The Washington Post reported the failure of D.C. officials to turn over medical records is more than just, or this is what the judge said. This is the Washington Post story. The failure of D.C. officials to turn over medical records is more than just inept and bureaucratic jostling of papers. It raises the possibility of deliberate mistreatment. I find that the civil rights of the defendants have been abused. I don't know if it's because he's a January 6th defendant or not, but if I find this matter should be referred to the Attorney General of the United States for a civil rights investigation into whether the D.C. Department of Corrections is violating the civil rights of these defendants in this or maybe other cases. He called the treatment of the defendant inexcusable, pointed at the jail officials, and says, quote, does nobody care? All right, so here's the backstory. This is from the New York Times. The defendant was scheduled for surgery on his wrist in June, Judge Lamberth said at a hearing on Wednesday, but by September the surgery had not taken place, so the judge ordered jail officials to provide him with the defendant's medical records so he can consider issuing a formal order requiring the procedure. The jail officials delayed getting Lamberth the records, prompting the angry outburst from the bench. Lawyers for several of the roughly 40 January 6 defendants who are still in D.C. jail in lieu of bail, have raised complaints about mistreatment. Some have argued that their clients have been denied proper food and access to showers. Others have complained about restrictions on religious services. Jail officials have denied the accusations and say the defendants are not being singled out, which then means just your whole jail is inept. But, and you know, and maybe that is the case. I don't know. The case spotlights spiraling frustration among U.S. judges over conditions at the long-troubled D.C. jail. It houses nearly 1,500 federal and local detainees right in the nation's capital. It's a 45-year-old facility. Let's see here. Complaints around the facility have reached new heights this spring after prisoner advocates criticized the prolonged confinement of detainees to stamp out the coronavirus pandemic. For roughly 400 days, jail officials imposed a 23-hour-a-day lockdown to enforce social distancing before conditions were eased this summer. Reports said a lot of the problems that the January 6th defendants have raised with the way they're being treated is not unique to them and is being faced by others who remain in the prison. Other defendants being held on unrelated charges have voiced similar concerns. So again, I don't know what's going on over there, but that judge is not pleased. So we shall see. And I just saw this. Boy, if you're the Republicans, you got to be ecstatic. So apparently, Kyrsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona who can't even get a moment of peace in the bathroom, and who had idiots chasing her on Monday at the Boston Marathon she was running in. Telling you. According to a new survey, I should have read the poll. So the polling firm here is it's a company called Data for Progress, and I don't know if you've ever heard them. They are a progressive polling firm. So whenever you hear a poll and it's got Data for Progress, take it for what it's worth, okay? But according to the poll, a survey of likely Democratic primary voters in Arizona, Sinema may lose a primary. In fact, there are several potential challengers who are inside the margin of error, including Representative Ruben Gallego, Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego, I don't know if they're related, Rep. Greg Stanton, and Tucson Mayor Regina Romero. In a five-way race, the poll found that Ruben would beat out Sinema 23% to 19%, being the representative there. Do it. If you're the Republicans, you want them to do this. Absolutely. See, this is Arizona is a purple state. And so the fact that you have Sinema in there and you're going to primary her for an uber progressive dude, Republicans would love that. They'll have a much easier time beating people who are not Kyrsten Sinema. And I saw somebody do an analysis on this, and they were like, yeah, it's, you know, it's just like what's happening to Liz Cheney. No, it's not. And here's why. As somebody from Wyoming, Wyoming is not purple. Not even close. I was shocked a number of years ago. This is after I had moved, obviously, and I haven't lived in Wyoming since I got done with high school, but that they had a Democratic governor. But then every time I'd read something about the dude, I'm like, really? I don't know about that. And I believe if you look at a precinct map for the 23 counties in Wyoming that and then within those, there's like two spots of blue, and they're basically Laramie, where the college is, and Jackson. Or Jackson Hole, as some people probably know it. But it's, by the way, it's called Jackson. The town's name is Jackson, not Jackson Hole. So, yeah, that's a little different. If they primary somebody out, if they primary her, it actually moves it in what I feel is probably an easier direction, because that's a very different makeup. But Arizona, not so much. Which is why it literally will flip-flop. You know, you had two Republican senators, then you had two Democrat senators. Before that, you had one Democrat, one Republican. And so it could go either way. All right, 800-801-8999, the phone number here on the show. Okay, I put it over here. I just think this is really cool. I always like to put a little sports. So did you see the space-themed uniforms that University of Central Florida is going to be donning? So they have a space game every year. Maybe you don't care about college football, but bear with me. There'll just be a moment. So every year since 2017, the Central Florida football team wears uniforms that honor the school's support of the United States Space Program. probably because it's, you know, pretty close to the Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, but so that's a good guess. In fact, 29% of Kennedy Space Center employees are University of Central Florida alumni. And throughout the year, shuttle launches have led to some pretty incredible photos from the UCF football stadium. Oh, yeah, look at that. That's cool. So, yeah, this the space uniforms this year are pretty awesome. So you should check those out. It'll be the 40th anniversary of the space shuttle program. And, yeah, these things are super intricate. So that the, you know that the when they and go back to the astronauts in the white suits, you know, the big white suits like in the 80s, 90s. And when they take their helmet off, they still have that cloth, that white cloth cover. So the helmet, the football helmet looks like that, which I think is pretty cool. And then, what does it say? Citronauts on the back of it. All right. Sorry. It's a little, well, okay. College football's here, man. Now, here's something entirely different. This is not cool. This is not okay. And frankly, I feel like maybe I've long had my concerns about the state of Wisconsin when I previously lived next door to it. So it does not surprise me that some butcher up in Wisconsin would do this, but come on, man. A Wisconsin butcher is selling sausages that are stuffed with candy corn. The Spooktoberfest brats are brats stuffed with candy corn. What is wrong with you people? And I'll tell you, there isn't a lot that you can't get people to eat if you tell them it's compressed meat in the state of Wisconsin. But, you know, this some you have to draw the line somewhere. Where is this? Madison, Wisconsin. I'm going to find the name of the place. Because if you're so, maybe you're some creepy person who wants to order this. I don't know. All right, now the whole page is screwed up, so whatever. Anyway, Madison, Wisconsin, that's where it's doing it. All right, let's see, 45 minutes after the hour, and I will need to get into this Neil deGrasse Tyson story. Oh, and I mentioned that there was somebody else who was upset that William Shatner went to space. We will do that story directly next here on The Schnitt Show. Hang on.
The Schnitt Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take pride in presenting Schnitt.
Okay, let's spend a few minutes talking about the British royal family, because who doesn't love talking about the British royal family? First, Papa here, Prince Charles. You see this car? So he took a perfectly beautiful, gorgeous, pristine, James Bond-style, old-school Aston Martin, ripped the guts out of this machine, and it was bragging that now he has a an Aston Martin that runs on wine and cheese, which sounds ridiculous, but specifically what it is it's English white wine, and then it's whey, which is produced when you make cheese. How stupid is that? And they still have to mix gasoline in there. You take a car like that and make it run on wine and cheese. That's the most French thing I've ever heard, and you're the, you know, the Prince of Wales or whatever. All right, so that's number one. Now to his kid, Prince William, who just couldn't leave well enough alone yesterday. Prince William belittled the recent frenzy of space tourism yesterday, shortly after Star Trek star William Shatner dipped into space on Jeff Bezos' rocket. The Duke of Cambridge was speaking to the BBC about his initiative to repair our planet and encourage billionaires to get their heads out of the clouds. We need some of the world's greatest brains and minds fixed on trying to repair this planet, not trying to find the next place to go and live, which is really rich coming from a member of the British royal family. I don't know if you heard this thing they used to like to do, you know, like rule everything everywhere. Also, tell me about the British space program. How's that working out? You guys getting a lot accomplished? Is there a long and storied history of the British space program? Famous astronauts who, you know, did some firsts? Or are you just a little cheesed that, you know, we kicked you out of our house and then did our whole thing and then, you know, took over as the superpower and then went to the moon? Because that's kind of like, it sounds like you're whining, actually. But we need some of the world's greatest brains and minds preparing this planet, not trying to find the next place to go and live. I love this argument because it's not just him. It's also idiots on Twitter. And they're just like, this is all that money could have solved world hunger. No, it couldn't. Nope. Wouldn't do it. Sorry. Shatters. And there's, and by the way, there's other money. You know, you can do two things at once. Shatner's journey to space was the latest flight by Bezos' Origin Venture. The Amazon honcho is competing with Sir Richard Branson. See, there's your space program. I think you're just cheesed because it's one of your own and he's having to do it by himself because you guys are like, no, we need crown jewels. We need horse-drawn carriages. We need six palaces spread all throughout the kingdom. You know, build a rocket ship with that, I'm just saying. Competes with Tesla's Elon Musk and with Sir Richard Branson to turn the great beyond into a lucrative industry. The prince said it was quite crucial to be focusing on this planet rather than giving up and heading out into space. Try to think of the solutions for the future. You know, Elon Musk, the irony of this, of course, is especially when you get into the portfolio of Elon Musk, and Jeff Bezos has a lot going on too, but specifically with Elon Musk, the dude's building the Teslas, and he's the Hyperloop transit system, this high-speed transit system. I mean, he's literally doing things that do get you to a place where there are less fossil fuels being utilized because this is what Prince William is whining about. The foundation, oh, wait, hold on just a sec. I skipped something. Yes, William also mentioned climate anxiety among the new generation who believe their futures are basically threatened the whole time. Why do you think they believe that? They had a study about anxiety and even suicide and, you know, and all of that nastiness, which is unfortunately something that was escalated during all of the COVID insanity, where they were talking to college kids, high school kids, and even younger about, where does your anxiety lie? Do you remember all the stuff that used to make you anxious when you were a kid? You know, depending on what you were, maybe it's performance in sports or performance in school or girls or boys or family stuff, you know. I could call it the normal, but I'm sure there was some outlier stuff for some people and I'm missing here. But now you have a whole generation that's running around and is under the assumption that literally we're all going to be gone if we don't do something in 10 years because every 10 years they make that statement. And then it doesn't come to fruition, at least, and there's never a solid explanation why. So you got to come out and you got to, if you go back and you look at all the predicted dates going back to even before Al Gore's movie, we've hit all those numbers. I remember I laughed my butt off reading something. It was an older article from the 90s, and they were talking about how Kitty Hawk, you know, where the Wright brothers first flew, which is out in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I should know. I was just out there for a bachelor party not that long ago. But they had this very ominous paragraph, and they're like, and then one day, won't it be ironic when the kids who want to go see where man first took to the air have to do so through the use of a glass-bottom boat or a submarine? It was absurd. By the way, you can right now, go drive, park in the parking lot, walk up on the dunes. It's no submarine needed. no glass bottom boat, but the ocean's right over there. If you want to do that, then you go about a half mile that away to the east, and if you want to get in the water, that's where it is. It's very, very busy, though not right now, because it is a little cooler in North Carolina out there. So, anywho, there we go. Hour two in the books. One more to go. We'll get into it next. It is the Schnitt Show. Hang on.
The Schnitt Show.